to Eat Drink Social. My name is Courtney Sandora, and throughout this podcast series, you'll be hearing from myself and the Go Social team. Go Social is a PR and social media marketing firm with offices in Denver, Colorado, and Louisville, Kentucky. We'll be discussing social media trends and influencer best practices in the food and beverage landscape. If you have any questions and want to reach out, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at The Go Social, or you can visit our website at goforthbesocial.com. We are joined today with Caitlin of Likeable Cocktails. She is a bartender of 18 plus years, I believe.
You got that right.
A creator, consultant, and a cocktail influencer for sure on social. So thanks for joining us today, Caitlin.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Looking forward to chatting.
Yeah. So I guess just to get started, could you just tell us how you got into the world of bartending?
Oh, I mean, it's kind of like a story that many people start their bartending life with. You know, it was a job to help pay for university, you know, fresh out of going into university and trying to make money to, you know, pay for tuition and do all that. So I started pretty early on. I mean, I'm in Canada, and most places you can kind of start working in restaurants and bars and stuff at 18. So that's what I did. I would go to school during the day, and in the evenings, if I wasn't teaching dance, I was going to work in restaurants. Started as like a host and a server, and then made my way into bartending and kind of fell in love with it. And it was one of those things where I didn't expect it to be my career at the end of the day, but the way that kind of my journey and path took me, it ended up being my job now for almost 20 years. And I absolutely love it. And I couldn't see myself doing anything else. You know, if I actually, you know, did what I went to school for, well, I guess I kind of do. I mean, I went to school for film. So I guess, you know, making videos on the internet and bartending at the same time is kind of marrying those two things together now, which is kind of fun.
That's awesome. So yeah. I did see in your little intro, get to know you a video, you mentioned that you got the title of world's best bartender.
Can I did.
Share a little bit more about how that came about?
Yeah, I mean, it took a while to kind of get to that stage in my career. But, you know, starting off as a bartender and just kind of, you know, working in nightclubs and restaurants and, you know, hotels and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, as I kind of progressed in the industry and discovered this really like this love and kind of passion for the craft of, you know, creating cocktails and creating stories to the cocktails, I started working at a place that was really heavily focused on craft cocktails. And my like mentor, I would say, he kind of pushed me into my first bartending competition. And I had no idea that world existed. I was like, competition for bartending? I'm like, I don't do flair. I don't throw bottles in the air. That's, you know, I would break more things than be successful at it. So he was like, no, this is a whole thing where, you know, you can kind of incorporate storytelling and presentation and all of that into, you know, making cocktails. And so he kind of pushed me in that direction, and it opened up this whole new world for me. And I did that for a few years, and I almost left the industry and took a job as like a brand ambassador for a spirits company. And I was hesitant because I'm like, there's a couple of things I really want to do before I fully leave the bar industry. And one of them was participate, or at least try to participate, in this cocktail competition called World Class. And it's kind of known as the, you know, biggest and best bartending competition for craft cocktail bartenders in the world. More than 10,000 people enter every year from 60 different countries. And you have to win your country first to go on to compete against all the other country winners. And I entered with kind of just the mindset of, I'm just going to do this to see how far I go. And I kept on making it past stages, and I won Canada. And then I went into the global championships, and I went down from 60 people to 10 people to 4 people. And I was crowned the winner that year in 2017. And it was kind of one of those like crazy pinch me moments of, what just happened and how did I get here? And this is amazing and incredible. So yeah, that kind of changed my trajectory of, you know, what I was doing for the rest of my life. Even it's, you know, affects me still to this day, which is something that I never imagined happening. And it's pretty incredible.
What was your secret sauce? Like, what was the cocktail?
Ooh, You know, I get asked this all the time of like, what was the winning drink? And the thing about world class is it's not just one drink. I think I did 60 cocktails beginning to end. So it's like an entire portfolio of spirits. So it's not just like, you know, not just Ketel One vodka. It's you're doing drinks for, you know, every spirit imaginable. And there's like black box challenges. There's tasting challenges where you have to, you know, sip a glass of a blended scotch and you have to pick out what the blend is. And there's ones you can prepare for that are heavily on like storytelling. But yeah, so there wasn't really one individual cocktail, but I think what helped me propel me going through all the stages was I was unapologetically, authentically myself. And that's just something that I've never been afraid to, you know, put my own spin on things and just be myself. And that's kind of helped push me through the competition. And yeah, I mean, there's no other better way than to sit down at a bar and watch a bartender do what they love and know that they're doing it because they love it. And I think that's what kind of helped guide me in the whole process.
That's awesome. So you had mentioned that it opened up doors winning this,
Yeah.
and you got to guest bartend. So what, just where is the coolest place you've ever guest bartended, or maybe just your favorite
Ooh,
bar? I don't know.
yeah. I mean, after winning, the couple of years, literally up until kind of like pandemic when the world was shut down and we couldn't travel anywhere, I was traveling around the world and going to lots of really cool places from, you know, all over Asia, whether it was Thailand or Taiwan, and going to Australia, going to like Eastern Europe, you know, Switzerland, Brazil, like all these really cool places that, you know, I'd never imagined being able to get to that many places in that short of time. But I mean, I've got some favorite spots. Like, where was I got to bartend at this really cool bar in Dubai, in like one of like the world's tallest buildings. So like, you know, when you're up, you know, I don't even know how many floors I was up, like past 90 floors, you know, and looking out at the beautiful kind of city from being that high up is pretty amazing. There was this, I did a really fun activation on top of a rooftop in Switzerland. In Switzerland, it's their landscape is absolutely breathtaking to look at. So there's been some pretty cool places. And yeah, it's kind of feels like a fever dream sometimes, you know, looking back, because you kind of forget when you've, you know, got to do so many different things. You're like, oh yeah, I got to remember that was really cool. I forgot that I did that. Like, oh yeah, that was awesome.
That's great. So you know, we read a lot about trends, and there's a whole trend, like zero proof, and you know, lots of articles about Gen Z drinking less. And what are your thoughts on like that whole kind of low proof, zero proof movement as a bartender?
You know what? I think it's easy to slap the label trend on it, but it's for me, it's not really a trend because it's always been around. When I started bartending, you know, at like 18, 19 years old, I was actually a sober bartender for 4 years. And for me, so it's kind of always been a part of my life and my lifestyle. My mom doesn't drink, my sister doesn't drink, my partner doesn't drink. So I'm constantly around people who, you know, are after really tasty non-alcoholic drinks. I think now though, it's ramping up and it's more visible because people are actually making products that are delicious and comparable to like full strength spirits. Whereas back in my day, when I first started bartending, you know, in like 2004 or 2005, having a non-alcoholic spirit was, it just didn't exist. So there was no emphasis on, you know, making interesting non-alcoholic cocktails. Was an afterthought. You know, the best we got was maybe a Virgin Caesar. For my Canadians out there, a Virgin Bloody Mary, or you know, like a Shirley Temple. But now it's like, well, with more and more people, you know, asking and demanding for those non-alcoholic or low alcoholic serves, you kind of shoot yourself in the foot if you don't include those options on your menu, if you don't include those options when you have friends coming over, because it's a massive market and there's tons of really great products out there now to actually choose from. And it's the category is only going to grow and grow and grow, especially with people like bringing in the cannabis products. So that's also kind of interesting too, to see. I mean, cannabis has been legal in BC where I live for a long time, but seeing it now kind of being approached as like, hey, instead of adding, you know, alcohol to your cocktail, why not try something that has like CBD or a hemp spirit or something else? So that could be interesting too, to see how that develops in the next few coming years.
Definitely. Definitely. Are there any other kind of either cocktail or just spirit trends in general you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I think over the pandemic, it really forced people to kind of dive into like the RTD space, the like ready to drink world. And then now you can walk into like any liquor store and it's not just like a hard seltzer in the fridge. There's fully realized cocktails where you can get like a canned Negroni or a canned Old Fashioned or a Margarita or Paloma. Pardon me. So I think that is one of those things where I think that's only going to grow and grow. And for, actual bars and restaurants, it's a consistency thing. If you can put like a cocktail on tap, you know that no matter who is serving that drink, it's going to go out the same way every single time and in a timely manner. You've got like amazing places like, Double Chicken Please in New York, where like the front half of their bar is like a draft room and they've got all of their cocktails on draft, and it's like, get a drink in somebody's hand that's at top quality and it's had all of the, the same effort and attention to detail put into it as if somebody was making it for you right in front of you. I think that's only going to get bigger and bigger, which is kind of awesome in a way, because like you said, like consistency is key. And if you can get, a drink in somebody's hand a lot faster, it might, get them to order that second drink or that third drink responsibly, always.
Yes, definitely. Nice. Okay. Do you think tequila, I read a lot about tequila being hot.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to continue to grow or?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, tequila, like agave spirits in general, have kind of been at the top of the list for the last couple of years. And I think that's fantastic. Like, I'm definitely a tequila lover. And so for me, I'm like, hell yeah, bring it on. The more the merrier. But I think people are now getting a little bit more, courageous with exploring like the other agave spirits, whether it's like Sotol or diving more into Mezcal. But I think also, too, like, it's really interesting to see a like rum kind of make a good kind of play for the spotlight too. And like, rum can kind of be made anywhere. There's actually some really tasty rums coming out of Mexico. So I think, yeah, tequila and rum are still going to be kind of at the top of my list to kind of look out for this next kind of like year or two.
Nice, very interesting. So switching gears to the social side,
Yeah.
I know you're on a couple of different platforms. What's your favorite network, social network to create for?
Ooh, you know what? For when I first started my channel, I would say like TikTok was definitely more receptive and I was able to grow my audience there like fairly quick. Whereas like Instagram before like Reels started, it was like IGTV or, and it didn't really have that kind of like short form space yet. And it was really hard to gain kind of like more followers and more people to add to, this growing little community. Whereas like TikTok, it was like, oh yeah, people love, and they're like, yep, let's follow, let's comment, let's, like get it out there. But now it's almost like kind of done this like little bit of a flip where Instagram Reels, it's like, that's all you see. It's so you rarely come across like a static post anymore of just like photos or like a carousel of photos. So going now into like the Instagram space, I feel like people are, really interested in, what content is being pushed out there, and they're saving and they're sharing videos, and you can see that it's really starting to take shape. Whereas TikTok, sometimes now there's a lot more barriers to kind of go through, and I think people are getting a little bit frustrated. I mean, in Canada, we don't have TikTok shop, so whenever I hear people talk about TikTok shop, I'm like, I don't know what that is. Like, it's not clogging my feed, but I can understand your frustration if you're in the States and it's just clogging up your feed and you're like, I don't want to be sold a bunch of stuff while I'm trying to, take on content. So yeah, it was TikTok, but it might be leaning more to Instagram now, where I kind of prefer
Have you dabbled
posting.
in YouTube Shorts at all, or?
Yeah, if my videos are short enough, I will throw them up there. It's because that's the one thing, right, where the barrier is like it can be max 60 seconds. And for Instagram, it's max like 90 seconds. So usually my videos fall within that, just over 60 second range, closer to that 90 second range. So it's really hard to like, edit the same video twice just to be able to like fit them on like one platform. Whereas, if I make the video, it will go up okay on TikTok and Instagram, but not necessarily short. So when my video is short enough, yes, I put it up there, but they tend to be over 60 seconds, which is kind of like a bummer.
Yeah, no, totally. Do you ever create different? I noticed you do like have a lot of similar content in the yep. YouTube network. Do you ever create different? Like, do you create with TikTok in mind and then share it?
Sometimes, yeah. You know what? I would say that I probably post more, maybe not more, but TikTok, I can post kind of that like conversational content a little bit easier, where it's like, you know, if I'm sitting and I'm, you know, watching or duetting somebody's video or, you know, doing a stitch, it seems to play better on TikTok because I think people, you know, tend to gravitate towards like TikToks, whether it's like a daily vlog or a day in the life or a get ready with me or something like that. I think those are a little bit more popular in TikTok versus Instagram, whereas Instagram is, you know, not necessarily more polished, but it's definitely more intentional on like, from what I see anyways, in like the cocktail space, it's a little bit more intentional of like, here's the drink, here's the information, there you go. Whereas TikTok, I think you can be a little bit more loose and kind of free with, you know, if you just want to put up a silly video for the sake of putting up a silly video, that's totally fine. I mean, I'm sure you can do it on Instagram, but I just feel more comfortable putting up those kind of like one-offs on TikTok more so than Instagram for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, speaking of feeling comfortable, you're in front of the camera all the time.
Yes.
Was that hard for you or were you just a natural?
You know what? It's not, I wouldn't say it's hard. Especially when you're by yourself, like, you know, and you don't have anybody kind of like lurking and staring at you being like, what's this person doing? It's a little bit easier that way. But I mean, maybe I have the unfair advantage of like, I grew up I grew up dancing and being on the stage and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff. And I used to do like TV commercials and stuff like that when I was a kid. So I have that experience of having a camera in my face at like a young age. So to me, it's not foreign. I did have to kind of get used to like hearing the sound of my voice over and over and over again when I'm editing a video. And sometimes I'm like, God, I sound like such an idiot, or like, oh, my voice is so annoying. Like, you know, it's like when you're sitting there, I'm sure too, like when you listen back to a podcast, you're like, oh, like, why did I say that? Why did I do this? Why did I pick that outfit today? So yeah, sometimes you can be hypercritical of yourself, but like having a camera in front of me, yeah, it's not as jarring, I guess, as it could be for somebody else, just because I've been kind of used to it since I was pretty young, which is good for me, I guess. Good yeah. To be comfortable.
Well, I will tell you, there's like this podcast studio in Denver, and the people that run it, they said without fail, every time they have women coming in to record a podcast, they all say, I hate my voice. I hate my voice. You know, like, guys never say that. So ever since they said that, and anyone on my team, because we have
amazing
all female team, I was like, you're don't like, say that. We have to stop saying that. About
truly.
So
I'm going to take that on. Got to stop saying that. Absolutely.
So what do you shoot your videos with?
Well, right now I just use my iPhone. I did recently buy like a new like little Sony camera, but I'm still kind of like dialing and figuring out exactly how to operate it to its like best ability. But good old iPhone 15 Max Pro. It does the job fairly well. And because I edit, I do all of my editing on my phone too. It's just kind of easy to have it all in one place and push it out there. But I like to film. I recently switched over to filming in like cinematic mode, which gives like a really crisp image quality, which is great. It takes a little longer to upload, but it's worth it, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's, I wish I could have the time to, you know, do the more like dramatic and multi-camera angle shoots, but living in an apartment I already take up too much space with all of my with all of my junk, that just would not be fair to my partner and my animals if I had any more of a setup in here.
No, I mean, that's so great that so many content creators are literally just doing it with their iPhone, you know.
Yeah.
So you can,
like you said, some people do an amazing job, obviously, when they have like the proper equipment and they've got like great setups and, you know, have that capacity. Like I said, one day maybe I'll get there. I would love to be able to have like a little like side studio that I could just move everything to. And, you know, it's basically clock in like a 9-to-5 job. But as much as I post, I still kind of look at this as like an enjoyable like side hustle, not like my main source of like, you know, of attention. But I mean, if it comes to that point where I'm like, nope, this is my main source of attention, like I need to expand and, you know, make this a bigger operation, then maybe I'll do that. But living in an expensive city, it is very hard to come by spaces that are affordable to be able to do that.
That makes sense. So how do you come up with the recipe ideas for your content?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'll do a lot of classic cocktails. I also try when I'm doing content, I really try to keep the, like the viewer in mind, and not go too off the rails with like complicated recipes or complicated ingredients or hard to find ingredients, because I genuinely want people to recreate the stuff that I put out there. You know, I could be super selfish and do like these, you know, wild and crazy concoctions, and every once in a while I'll throw one in there just to see how it plays. But so I really like to focus on classics and then kind of like twists on classics that are kind of easy for somebody to be like, oh, I really like a Negroni, but here's like a slight variation of that Negroni that I can kind of step outside of my comfort zone and try. But then, I mean, since I've been doing bartending now for like, gosh, almost 20 years, I have like a collection of recipes that I've, you know, written for menus and, you know, different brands and that all throughout these years that I kind of have stashed away that I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that recipe. I should share that one, or, you know, so they're kind of all just like swimming there in my brain. And it depends on what I have in the fridge and what I have in stock in my like bar that I'm like, oh, I got to do a video today. What do I have? I'm like, I've got a grapefruit. I've got a lemon and I've got honey. All right, let's figure this out.
And you have Midori, I saw.
Oh, yes.
Why are you using that up?
Exactly. I still am at the bottom, staring at the bottle. I'm just like, all right, we've got to keep going with this bottle until it's done. Another 20 ounces or so left.
Well, I saw that you do some brand partnerships, like mm-hmm. you one with Empress Gin. We do a lot of that on our end. We work with a lot of brands, and then we're, you know, working with different influencers to create content. But so what advice would you have to brands? Like what should they be doing better when they're working with creators?
You know what? It's every brand that I've worked with is kind of a little bit different. And I do feel a little bit lucky that a lot of relationships that I have with brands are like personal relationships, because I have been working in this industry for so long, and not just on like the social side, but like behind the scenes. So you get to know kind of like the brand reps and like even the distillers and all that kind of stuff, which is really cool. But then coming to it now from like this space where you're working and dealing with a lot of like agencies, I would say. So not necessarily like directly working with the brand, but you're working with like the agencies that are, you know, getting the content for the brand. I would say, you know what, everybody's been pretty good. There are times though, sometimes when I'm like, you know, you send over like your finished like video or caption or whatever for approval, and it's like, oh, can you adjust this? I'm like, sure, no problem. Send it back over. And it's like, okay, we also need this, and this. And I'm like, I just wish right up front, you just had said like in the brief, this is exactly what I want you to do. We need this exact information. And you know what I mean? So it's like almost like overly detailed brief. Sometimes I'm like, I'm all for creative freedom, but my creative freedom does not match your idea of what creative freedom should be. Then I'd much prefer a insanely detailed brief going into it before, you know, putting a video together. Cause unfortunately, when you're making a video and it doesn't work, you're like, well, like, oh, can you add in this? And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to redo the entire video. Unfortunately, I can't just like add something in, but I'll do it because that's what you want. But yeah, a little more detail sometimes.
That's really good advice. Are there any brands you haven't partnered with that you like really want to?
Ooh, let's see. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are. Like, there's, you know, a tons of brands out there. I've never officially partnered with like Aperol. I'd love to partner with Aperol. You know, I put that stuff in everything. It's like ketchup to me. Even some like glassware like brands, it'd be cool to like partner with like Nude Glassware, amazing like European company that makes beautiful glassware. Other brands, I've never partnered with, say, Hendrix, which I think would be cool because they've always got some like really interesting like one-off bottles that they introduce every year. But yeah, I mean, there's lots. I'm always open to like chatting with people and chatting with different brands to see how we can like form a relationship. There's definitely some that I've said no to that just don't fit my brand or my kind of like content that I put out there, but I'm always open to a conversation.
Cool. Is there any advice you'd give to someone who might be a new creator who's really looking to get into this space?
Yeah, persistence and patience, truly. It's you know, it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, for some people you get really lucky with maybe like a viral video or something that really kind of pushes you out there and you get a lot of eyes on you, but that's when you have to be like really on top of it. I, you know, even now, like I try to pump out like 5 videos a week for consistency's sake, because you know, the people that follow me have kind of come to know that like Monday through Friday I'm going to put out a new video. Some weeks are better than others, just depending on how busy I am. But for a newbie coming in, it's like, you just got to, you know, keep going. And when you feel frustrated and your views are low or your videos aren't doing as good as you hope them like to do, sometimes I'll put out a video that I'm like, oh, this one's going to be so good. This is really going to get the viewers going. And then it flops. And I'm like, oh, I'm so disappointed. I really thought this one was going to be like one that was going to, you know, go viral or whatever. But yeah, you just got to be consistent with it. Consistency is key. And be yourself. Like I said, like you can kind of tell when somebody's being authentic, like with their content. You know, you watch something and you're like, I don't buy it, or I don't mesh with that. And it's usually because it's like the person doesn't come across as being kind of like authentically them and authentic to what they're trying to put out there.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, we've done like 50 plus interviews with people, and that's the number one thing people say over and over is like, just be yourself and be authentic.
Yeah. And like comparing yourself to somebody else is like, you know, that quote, whatever it is, like comparison is the thief of joy. You know, there's a lot of people in this like cocktail creator space. And even I'll watch other people's videos and I'm like, oh, man, like that's so good. That's so much better than what I'm putting out, or, you know, this or that. But at the same time, I'm like, if I put out those types of videos, it wouldn't be authentic to who I am. So the people who watch me and the people who follow me know what they're going to get. And that's why they keep coming back. So, you know, you gotta, you know, not compare yourself to other people either, because that will just suck the life out of you.
No, that's great advice. Okay. So last question, is there anything we should be on the lookout from you for? Are you doing like a book or anything?
Yeah, well, I am actually, I'm in the process of writing a cocktail book. It's set to come out next year. I'm in the middle of doing my manuscript. It's due in a couple of months. So that's exciting. Other than that, man, nothing too crazy, you know, just keep plugging away, doing lots of like fun kind of content collabs coming up and doing some more traveling, which is great. So I'm going to try to, you know, get that into some videos and, you know, switch it up. And, you know, anytime I travel, kind of give those guides of like, hey, if you're going to be in Amsterdam, these are the places that you should go and have a cocktail, or, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. So book is coming next year. More travel, more fun, more cocktails.
Awesome. Well, we will be on the lookout for that for sure. And we really thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, I know. I really appreciate you having me on.
All right. Take care.
All right, everybody. That wraps up today's episode of Eat, Drink, Social. Thanks for listening. If you have a story to share or know somebody that does, feel free to reach out to us.